Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, there's an old quote often repeated to journalism students. If one person says it's raining and another says it's not your job to quote them both, but to look out the window. Perhaps ironically, no one knows who originally said this, but it does highlight the issue of balance in reporting. Should the media always present both sides of an argument or a conflict? And could philosophy help in this regard? Dr. Robert Grant is founder of Hear Listen, a community-based philosophy project. Afternoon, Robert.
Hi, Sean. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Could you tell us what is Hear Listen? What is a community-based philosophy project?
Yeah, basically, it's a project I co-founded with John Bissett in Rialto and Senator Lynn Ruan. And essentially, we try and bring philosophy into communities that wouldn't normally get access to philosophy. So philosophy has a kind of a strange reputation as being, you know, very academic and, you know, elitist. And we're trying to bring it back into the day-to-day, into the communities, into the heart of communities. So we've run philosophical dialogue groups where we get together and we talk about philosophical issues in community centres, in Mountjoy Prison, in cafes, in schools, primary schools, secondary schools, all over the place.
Yeah.
So that's what we're about.
Okay. Yeah. And I assume you're trying to kind of couch this in practical terms for people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a sense, yes. But I also think that everybody, by virtue of being a human being, has a kind of a philosophical inclination. You know, we all think about what it means to be free, what it means to for something to be fair or unfair. We all have these instincts about philosophical questions. We just don't get the chance to talk about them enough. So I think the ability and the capacity to do philosophy is already within us as human beings. You know, I don't think that's a problem.
So, yeah, I suppose that there's then thinking about your terms and what they mean. And
philosophy sometimes gets confused with the history of ideas. And that's what did Plato say about justice and what did Immanuel Kant and Descartes says. And that is philosophy as well. But there's also questions about what it means to have a just society and whether beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And we all have opinions on these things and we should have the space to talk about them. So
yeah,
that's what it's about.
Yeah. OK, so and you've been writing specifically about reporting about Gaza mainstream news outlets and how they report on that. And would it be fair to say your contention is that it's not balanced, or it's trying to be balanced, but then failing then?
Yeah, well, I think the question of balance is quite interesting. And I think that there's such a thing in media, and you outlined it there in your original quote, as both-sidism. And it's this impulse in a lot of media these days to always present two sides of a story. And the assumption then is that, you know, there's a balance there and that's fair. But of course, what if one side of the story is quite extreme and quite absurd and the other side is more reasonable? Then what happens to the balance? And what I was saying, when it comes to what's happening in Israel and Gaza, I think there's been an exploitation of this impulse to balance in the media in such a way that the media is constantly presenting both sides of the story as if this is kind of a conflict of equals, as if it's a traditional war between two sides. And therefore, you know, there's wrongs and rights on both sides. And I think that's a mistake, because I think if you look at the evidence, if you look at what's happened, and if you look at the history, it's quite clear it's not a conflict of equals. It's quite clear that there is one nuclear armed power backed by the wealthiest nation that ever existed, pummeling a imprisoned area the size of Loud. And if you look at the death tolls, no loss of life is acceptable. Certainly no civilian loss of life is acceptable. But there's 58,000 people dead in Gaza. And in Israel, it's a lot less. And that's not acceptable, but it's not equal. And we are constantly getting told that there's two sides to every story. And you see this also in political life, where there's the left and the right. There's liberal, conservative. There's nationalist, unionist. We've kind of reduced all of these complex ideas into binaries. And I think it doesn't do justice to the audience and the listener, and it doesn't do justice to the issues.
Yeah. Now, I mean, all the facts that you just cited there about Gaza, where did you get them from?
Oh, I mean, they're quite well established from the United Nations, from Amnesty International, from a lot of, I like to get a lot of my information from a lot of Israeli historians and Israeli genocide scholars. This is not biased information. You know, this is.
No, what I was implying, Robert, is that you could just as easily have picked up the Irish Times and got those facts and figures. So to pretend that, like, the mainstream media isn't reporting this stuff is nonsense.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point, right? And this is where the kind of subtlety and nuance comes into play. I am not saying that mainstream media is not presenting the facts. What I'm questioning is how they present the facts. I'm questioning the framing and the language that's been used. And for example, in my article, the first thing I talk about is this framing of the debate that says what happened in Gaza was caused by the October 7th attacks. Now, if you're just kind of glancing at the news or listening to the radio, you can see how that could be easily accepted as true. But of course, what that framing does is it makes Israel the victim who is justified in defending itself. Because it's saying history starts on October 7th, when if you look into it a little deeper, you realize that there's a long history of Israeli violence against Palestinians going back decades, where there's thousands and thousands of civilians being killed quite frequently. So it's a framing that's not factually incorrect, but it leads the reader and the audience down a certain way of thinking that I think is inaccurate.
Mm. So, but you're saying, aren't you inferring there a hell of a lot, saying that this latest round of awful violence started on October the 7th? It's a cycle that's happened many, many times before. That's absolutely
true. Who decides when you pick the point to start an explanation?
An excellent question. And if you're an Israeli historian, you could say, well, you should start 2,000 years ago when the Israelis were driven out of their homeland and then were subjected to anti-Semitism and all that kind of stuff.
And this is a huge debate within history. Where do you start? I mean, you could go back to the Big Bang here if you really want to get absurd about it. Yeah. But what you do have to look at is who does it serve to say it started on October 7th? What agenda does that suit? And I'm not saying that I have the perfect date to start, but at least we need to be given more of a historical context about it so people can have a more nuanced view and understand that it didn't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I mean, Robert, I'll read out that text has just popped up in front of me from Sean. Not me, another Sean. Considering News Talk only ever present a Palestinian point of view and a Palestinian bias, what's the point of this piece? And part of the problem, it often strikes me, is that it's not about how you're framing things. It's about how much goodwill you have when you're coming to talk about it and that people always see a bias in other people.
Yeah, I mean, I think bias is unavoidable. You know, I think there is no view from nowhere. There is no pure objective way of relating the facts. There's always going to be a bias, but I think we have to be honest about what our biases are. And I think, you know, there are other ways in which this was presented in ways that I think led people down a certain path. And I think, for example, another example that I use in the article is this kind of constant refrain of if you criticize Israel's policies, you get asked, well, do you condemn Hamas?
Mm.
And like, there's a legitimate conversation to be had about the moral standing of Hamas. Absolutely. But constantly using it to deflect away from a conversation about Israel's action is a fallacy. It's called the two quo Q fallacy or the U2 fallacy. And this is used all the time. Trump is an expert at this. If you criticize Trump for something, he says, well, Hillary Clinton is also guilty of crime, or Joe Biden is, you know, it just pushes it off. We're all criminals. What can you do about it? And they're subtle, manipulative tactics to deflect and avoid conversations. And these are the things that we were seeing in a lot of the media.
Yeah. Or whataboutery, I suppose, is probably the way of putting it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it.
The thing, though, particularly in mainstream media, that you know, it's limited by, if it's broadcast, it's limited by time and mm-hmm. it's limited by page space and that kind of thing. And probably the argument be that what they're attempting to do is balance, in the very loosest sense of the term, over like coverage over the spread of a week or a month or that kind of thing, rather than every time you mention the IDF has killed another 100 people and bombed a hospital, that you then have to go into an explanation as to what led to this.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying this is an easy problem to solve, but I think this particular conflict has brought about a series of questions that the mainstream media has to ask themselves. And I think the fact that social media was there to allow people to see what was happening on the ground kind of put a lot of pressure on mainstream media to it was exposed. You know, people could see what was happening before the mainstream media was able to catch up with it. And I think it's important that the media is honest enough to reflect on its own habits. And maybe it's time to reflect on this idea of balance and platforming both sides all the time. Maybe the media needs to be a bit more honest about its own values and not just assume that it's completely objective and just presenting things as they are. Maybe they need to take a stand on things a bit more forthrightly and honestly.
Yeah. Though at the same time, if, you know, and for instance, Pat Kenny has had the Israeli ambassador on many times.
Yeah.
And isn't there a function in that in explaining what their thinking is or explaining what they're like or their justifications for what they're doing and letting people listening make up their mind?
There is. But there's also a process of legitimization that happens when you platform. And by platforming a representative of Israel like that, you kind of lend a legitimacy to what they're saying. And perhaps that same balance is not afforded to the other side in this case. So I realize that it's a tricky game for the media to play, but they have to start asking themselves these kinds of questions.
Yeah. But when you say platforming,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't have the impression in Ireland there's a huge amount of sympathy for the Israeli government's point of view on this. In fact, quite the opposite.
No, and that's another interesting point. I think that's not necessarily been because of the media. I think that's been in spite of the media, to be honest. I think Ireland has a long-standing connection with Palestine due to its shared history of British colonialism and a lot of other reasons. And I think that I think the media have even probably pulled people back from that. Because what I talk about in the article is this idea of centrism. You know, the kind of centrist point of view, which centrism is an idea, a political position that doesn't really have any specific worldview. It really just chooses the middle of two sides. And I think when the media presents a conflict as being based on two different sides, Israel, Hamas, a lot of people who maybe don't have the time or the interest to dig into it, pick the middle because it's a useful way to get through life. It's a useful way to say if there's two extremes, chances are the middle has some sense to it. And I think that really kind of sometimes obstructs the kind of moral outrage and radical energy required to really pressure our government to take actual action, whether it's the Occupied Territories Bill or it's sanctions against Israel, or really hard-nosed specific actions to try and stop the genocide. So we can kind of wave flags and we can make statements, but what we really need to do is take specific actions to try and stop the killing that's going on, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's in the realm of political action. But from the point of view of the media, if we start news bulletins, whether it's Newstalk or RT or anywhere, and start expressing opinions in those news bulletins, it probably will undermine trust rather than giving very dry factual information as to this happened and that happened.
What I would say to you, Sean, is that you're already giving an opinion. Even if you're trying to hide it in a very dry, objective, factual way, the fact that you're choosing to present something, first of all, is an opinion that something is important. So choosing to give time and space to something is a value-based decision. And then how you describe it. So, for example, another thing is this kind of use of military terminology. We, like, the amount of reports I read and listened to that, like, would say 56 Palestinians lost their lives in a building, but Israel seized new territory in an expanded ground operation where it targeted a command center. This language may very well be factual, as you say, but it also has certain connotations, and it leads people to, again, conjuring up this idea of, well, it's wartime, you know, war and stuff happens during war. All is fair in love and war. And so there is a responsibility to own that kind of linguistic conventions and own that normalization in a way that acknowledges what it really means. Because I think you can kind of use the factual objective thing to get away with things, you know?
Mm. Though, I mean, in fairness, when it would be reported that Israel attacked a command center, would be what Israel claimed is a command center rather than we're taking at face value now. I say this about all the media, they keep saying that Hamas-run health ministry sounds like a sop to Israel. I don't really understand why that is. But
Exactly. And I mentioned that exact point as well in the article. I mean, why is that the case? And again, it's a subtle thing that you might not notice if you're not paying close attention, but it conjures up another image of maybe these figures are not credible, you know? So it's... this is all an interrogation that has to happen, I think.
Yeah. Though at the same time, within Israel, like the BBC and CNN particularly have been vilified for their reporting on what's happening in Gaza, even though it's been vilified in the UK for the opposite reason, if you see what I mean.
I do. And there was a big report recently on the BBC bias and, for example, how they would describe the loss of Israeli life as kind of slaughtered or brutally murdered, and the loss of Palestinians' lives would be they died or they were killed. So there is still bias there, but you're just seeing the kind of extreme differences that exist in the Western world and Israel now at the moment. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I don't know how those gaps are going to be bridged. And the media are caught in the middle. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have robust criticism of our media. There should be space for that. And there should be space for that within our media. And to be honest with you, I actually found it quite difficult to get this article published at all.
Oh, really?
And I had And I had a number of publications kind of take it on board and eventually say, look, we don't want to do this, even if they had originally accepted it. Because I think there's a slowness to own up to any critique of the media here. And that's what I mean. I appreciate the journal and I appreciate you having me on for that very reason, because it's important to have the conversations.
Robert, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was Dr. Robert Grant there, co-founder of Hear Listen, a community-based philosophy project. I'll read out a few comments from people. We only need to look at the mess that is American public discourse to see the importance of balance. They have no proper unbiased journalism there at all. It's always biased on one side or the other, says Cormac. Another texter says, philosophy is the only escape from the divisive nonsense that we're all subjected to via social media and news. Well, I mean, it's not really an escape, and I think he probably didn't get a chance to say it, but well, he did allude it to it, but like there's a branch of philosophy, logic, which actually they should teach to kids at school, because it helps you to kind of dissect an argument and go, well, actually, that first bit doesn't relate to the second bit. And that's kind of whataboutery. We did refer to that, or it's not logical at all. Sorry, there's a long history of terrorist attacks on Israel, says the texter. I think in modern parlance it's called whataboutery. Yes, we did mention that. I must say that I can't stand hearing the latest lies from Netanyahu or the IDF or the Israeli ambassador. It's the propagation of lies. They don't deserve the airtime. Hamas and the Gazans have no tanks or fighter jets to call it a war. It's just a massacre, a genocide, which has been said many times. But, you know, some people in the media might argue that it's actually worthwhile to repeat or to report on what Netanyahu or the IDF are saying. It's up to people listening to make up their mind. But that if they go, oh, they're still lying while they're still massacring people, could be a conclusion you could draw. The news should report the news and not opinion. Leave opinions to editorials and shows like yours. No offence, says another texter. I don't know why that's offensive. If Gaza and Hamas are so hopelessly outgunned and outnumbered, why don't they surrender and end the war? Well, they are. I think the war is effectively over, and it has been effectively over for quite some time. And all that's really happening at the moment is different swathes of the population are being moved and being bombed all at the same time. Great. Another extreme leftist trying to lecture us on morality. Nothing biased about that, says Declan. Well, I don't know if you know a lot about his political views as to whether he's an extreme leftist or indeed what you define as an extreme leftist. George from Skibbereen says, in fairness, the Israeli ambassador has been on News Talk on numerous occasions, despite having said she was leaving Ireland. Well, she has, as far as I know, left Ireland, but she can, of course, get on a phone. I think your man is being unfair in the Irish media. I think we, by and large, have a well-informed public because our media are generally well-regulated. And Tim says, I think part of your guest's problem is that he's not giving the general public enough credit. The media only has a responsibility to report the facts. We, the public, have the responsibility to interpret them.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.